Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, July 3rd, 2020. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, joining us from the New Republic, Alex Perrine will be here. Also joining us, the writer, or one of the writers from the AM Quickie, and now formerly of Splinter, and maybe Gawker, I'm not sure. Now the Discourse blog, Jack Crosby will be here. Also on the program today, the age of COVID, ladies and gentlemen, coronavirus rising in 40 of 50 states. As Arizona, California, Florida, Texas account for 25,000 new cases yesterday. HHS concedes it's not just a testing thing. Meanwhile, Mike Pence's Arizona Advanced Secret Service agents contract COVID as a convention rally cancellation is contemplated. And 999-911. Thank you, Atrios, for that one. Herman Cain owns the libs by being hospitalized with coronavirus. 2 weeks after blocking cities from mask mandates, Texas Governor Abbott mandates masks. Ex-U.S. Attorney Jeff Berman is set to meet with the House Judiciary. Trump administration makes it easier for pharma companies to gouge on corona vaccines and treatments. The Supreme Court stops Alabama from making it easier for people to vote in a pandemic. AOC shepherds a House repeal of a block to new public housing. Credit where credit's due. Chuck Schumer, Ron Wyden push unemployment automatic stabilizers. Virginia decriminalizes pot up to 1 ounce. And Arctic temperatures suggest Earth is at its hottest point in 12,000 years, at least. Congrats. All this
records all over the place.
It's all over the place. Heat is so big now. So big. All this and more on today's program. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. It is a casual Friday. It is super cash around here, folks. Because this is the last day before our vacation. We're going to be taking a week now and maybe 1 week in August. I know that's 2 weeks and 2 months. But we've also gone, 7 months without a vacation? Is that possible? No, we had one in February, I think. Right? 4 months. And we all need a little bit of a break, but we have some great interviews for you next week. Stephanie Kelton, Mike Pettis, Greg Mitchell, and more. Really interesting topics. I think you'll enjoy it. And Matt and Brendan are looking for some archive stuff to put in for the members. I mean, back, we have the deep archive and the deep archive. We may go with the deep archive this time, maybe go deep, deep in August. But we have so many more listeners now than we did 10 years ago when we started. There's a lot of stuff that was missed. I just remember the first interview I think we did on this show of of the ilk that we do now was Winner Take All Politics, I think it was. Was talking about some of the financial issues that we have in this country that we have exactly the same problem today, except for it's worse. And meanwhile, we have a pandemic, a coronavirus rising in 40, 50 states. There's some, research to suggest that a big part of it is indoor restaurant eating. And I know that has been in New York City. It has been sort of punted with the hopes that maybe we can keep this under control and get school to some extent for kids. I've seen a lot of mixed data about instances where kids can transmit, where kids can contract. I'm talking young kids. And all the data is mixed. And, when we look across the country in 40 or 50 states, what we clearly have here is a massive, massive failure of federal leadership. There's a reason why 200 years ago plus it was considered a smart thing to do to create a federation of states, to have a powerful federal government that could marshal forces in a way that 50 distinct units, it wasn't 50 at the time, cannot. And we've had a total abdication and failure, both an abdication and failure. Maybe the failure came after the abdication, maybe it became, I'm not sure. But we'll leave that up to the history books. But meanwhile, Donald Trump wants you to know that COVID is getting under control. It's nice that he's saying it in a passive sense, because these guys don't want any ownership of this. And it's as if they think the American public isn't looking at this and going like, wait, what? This is your job, dude. Here is Donald Trump.
Europe was way early and they're getting under control. We followed them with this terrible China virus. And we are likewise getting under control. Some areas that were very hard hit are now doing very well. Some were doing very well, and we thought they may be gone or they flare up, and we're putting out the fires. But other places were long before us, and they're now, it's a life. It's got a life. And we're putting out that life, because that's a bad life that we're talking about.
I think what he's trying to say is that, like, the virus is not going away, but we're trying to get rid of it. This is a guy whose whole campaign right now seems to be that Joe Biden is mentally incompetent to serve as president. And I got to tell you, glass houses, but B, I don't think that anybody, I don't know if this is, and this may be a little bit of an overstatement, but I don't think it's too much of one. I don't know if there's any single individual who is not going to vote against Donald Trump because of the revelation that Joe Biden might be mentally incompetent. Like, honestly, like, I don't know if there's like one vote. In fact, the people least likely to vote for Joe Biden, because they're not voting against Donald Trump or don't want to just exclusively vote for Donald Trump, I think the fact that Joe Biden might not have all his marbles is probably an upside, right? Like, people who are unhappy with Joe Biden's political agenda, the idea that Joe Biden might be a weak president in some way, is, I think, probably an upside. Do you guys think there's a single person who goes like, you know, I was going to vote for Joe Biden, but now I'm starting to think that like he might be, I don't know, not all there. Do you think there is a voter out there, like one voter who's going to think that way?
No, I can't imagine. I can't imagine what that person would look like.
I honestly, like, I can't even, what is the possible scenario? These guys are really, they cannot figure out how to deal with this. And it's all over the place.
Yeah, it's interesting to see all the stories pop up now saying, like, speculating that Trump will drop out in some way, or that he's, like, you know, beginning to fear, like, the losing. And I don't know how that's going to, like, impact their decision-making process over the summer either before we get to the fall.
I don't buy any of that.
I don't either.
But it is... I think it's just, I think it's a way, I think the I think it's, that's deployed strategically, the theory being that it's going to discourage Trump even more, which it very well may. Here's Donald Trump trying to run on something positive. Here's Donald Trump like trying to remind people, you got to look on the bright side of things.
The unemployment rate fell by more than 2 percentage points, down to just about 11%. We're down to the 11% number. We started at a number very much higher than that. As you know, we broke the record last month, and we broke it again this month in an even bigger way. This news comes on top of May.
There you go. The unemployment rate is down to 11%. The other thing that's sort of amazing about this is that they don't seem to have any sense of urgency about the huge impending crises that are about to hit. We're going to have a crisis in terms of people who extended unemployment benefits are going to run out. We're going to have a crisis in terms of having these shutdowns again. There's going to be a lot of businesses that are going to go under because they opened for this early shutdown, opening up, and they're going to have to go back in. And they're not going to make it. We're going to see the unemployment numbers go the other direction, I'm convinced, within a month, maybe two, you know, maybe less. Maybe 2 months. There's about to be a massive disaster in commercial real estate, apparently. There's going to be a problem at one point, and maybe it's in 2021. Maybe it's at the end of this year where all of these commercial loans reset. Does everybody remember this dynamic from the 2008 crisis? One of the big problems were that people got these loans that after 5 years or after 3 years, the rate would reset. And that's what's happening in the commercial loan business. A lot of people took out loans and they're going to reset at a different, higher rate. And it's going to be a problem. So, I don't know. Donald Trump's sitting there bragging about 11% unemployment. Wasn't that why Hillary Clinton, like one of the reasons why people felt Hillary Clinton lost? She was going around saying America is already great when we were at 3 or 4% unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
And now have they, I also read that they actually dropped the slogan, keeping America great, because people were like, I don't know if that's actually gonna, but you can't say make America great again because you've been president for 4 years now.
Remember our previous unemployment rate. That's the new slogan.
What was the one that they were trotting out at the beginning of this? Pivot to greatness or something like that?
Yes.
I don't remember what it was.
I can't remember what it was.
It was transition to greatness, which I feel like was like an, I feel like there's an anti-trans slap in the face there, but I might be paranoid.
Transition to greatness from where it was 5 months ago. Folks. Oh, I get this. Listen to this letter I got. Sam, I used to listen to you and Janine back in the day to stay sane. I think I emailed you once because I teach singing and I was worried about you wrecking your voice. You yelled so much and would get hoarse. Well, that hasn't changed. But I was yelling right along with you. I heard you mention Sunset Lake CBD products, and I ordered the salve. I've never used CBD, and I thought I'd try it for worsening arthritis in my fingers and especially in my thumb joints. I had zero expectations. I was astounded at how quickly and dramatically it works. I'd say the pain goes down 60 to 70% within 15 minutes. This is tremendously helpful because at only 60, I was already envisioning my days of playing the piano for myself and my students coming to an end. I'm planning to try the oil soon. Feel free to quote me on this. Well, I just did. These are intensely discouraging times, but you and your whole team keep me informed and entertained, even, dare I say it, hopeful. I was already a lefty. Now I'm even leftier. I live for Michael's laugh. I need to put it on my phone and carry it with me. I don't know about the Michael's laugh. Maybe we'll try and sell that. But we are, one of our sponsors is Sunset Lake CBD. We have talked about everybody on Team Majority is now big CBDers. This is a family-owned farm that used to produce, or still does, I think, milk for Ben & Jerry's ice cream. In 2018, they decided to diversify. They now plant 100% pesticide-free hemp outside of Burlington. They use only organic organic fertilizers. They can, you as a customer can go look at their third party test results on their website. It's all certified. They developed some regenerative agricultural practices with the help of University of Vermont. It's an amazing company. They pay $15 minimum wage. Majority of the company is owned by employees and they sell all sorts of CBD products. Next week on vacation, I am exclusively on their CBD roasted coffee. All next week. I'm also going to hit the gummy bears. They got new gummy bears that are 1,000 meg of CBD. They're really actually tasty, maybe too tasty, frankly. But I am a big user of the tincture. Helps me sleep at night. As you just heard, the topical salve is infused with organic beeswax and arnica. And if you're a smoker, Matt, take it away.
If you're a smoker, I recommend the Smalls, which are these little CBD buds that go right into your grinder so you can mix with tobacco or anything else you want to mix it with. I highly recommend the CBD Smalls.
Who do you think you're kidding when you say tobacco? Folks, they're fans of the show, and that is why they chose Left is Best, one word, for their coupon code. You get 20% off your order, which is nuts. If you like to smoke cannabis but don't want to get super stoned, you can try the CBD's hemp flowers. Like I said, they're all pesticide-free. Left is Best, 20% off, sunsetlakecbd.com, sunsetlakecbd.com. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to welcome to the program. I still don't know his title at the New Republic. I want to basically say editor-in-chief, but I know that's not correct. Is he there? There he is. Alex, are you editor-in-chief now of the New Republic?
I have not climbed that ladder yet. I'm still a staff writer.
Still a staff writer. All right. Well, in my mind, like I say, you are editor-in-chief. You are host of
The Politics of Everything.
Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite Friday guests, Alex, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much.
So what have you been doing these days, Alex? you know, I imagine going out, partying, going to restaurants, eating indoors in hermetically sealed restaurants.
I've been going to a lot of choir practice, and I've been attending a lot of concerts, playing a lot of basketball at the gym.
And mocking the soy boys wearing the masks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I've been spending a lot of time, doing childcare while trying to work. That's what I've been doing now.
Are you working on a big piece? We're not going to dwell on this, but I get the sense you're working on a big piece.
I have a couple that I am in the process of working on. Yeah.
All right, and they're big. They're sort of blockbustery, aren't they?
I hope so.
I can tell. I can tell by like the pattern of what I'm reading of yours.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about this. There's two obviously big stories that I think, you know, the past couple of weeks have, and I'm about to go on vacation. So there's a sort of like a quality of this, like, you know, if you remember, like in college, you go on like a spring break and everybody gets a little wild in the last couple mm-hmm. of days because you feel like you're never coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I like to pretend on vacation. So let's look back on this. There are two big stories, it seems to me. Obviously, what's going on with the presidential race, but that is, it seems to me, sort of like static and just sort of like slow deterioration with Trump. But who knows? And like yeah. I say, in 2 or 3 months, when the aliens come down, they may have some new information on Burisma that they were able to get through satellites intercepts.
Mm.
But the big story for me are, A, the abject failure of our society. I mean, this is society-wide mm-hmm. to deal with this pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one that is, I think, far more hopeful, but also interesting, and I know you've been tweeting a lot about this, is the seemingly complete lack of awareness that put aside the Republicans for a moment, that the establishment Democrats have for what's happening in their own party.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And let's start with that, because over the past couple of weeks, we had a major upset. I mean, I think like the Elliott Engel thing cannot be overstated, because, you know, Crowley, you could, and they certainly tried to write it off as like, he had no idea what was coming, and he got very cocky. And of course he was overconfident, because how is this, you know, whatever, 28-year-old woman yeah. who's a bartender going to knock him off? And he just got, flat-footed.
Yeah.
But Engel should have been on notice.
Yeah.
Right. But they didn't buy it. They did yeah. not buy it. And then we also saw this stuff about like Justice Democrats, they can't do anything. And, you know, they're not, they're in like in year three or four of what they're doing, essentially.
Right.
And to get Bowman in there, to get as close as they did with, Charles Booker.
Yeah.
I mean, these are big deals, it seems to me.
Yeah.
Now Hickenlooper, I feel like the progressives sort of didn't move quick enough on Romanoff.
Right.
And maybe, you know, in some respects, like, you know, if Romanoff had gotten the attention that Booker had, I think right. Booker, frankly, is a more interesting candidate to me. But yeah. I think Romanoff is good, but yeah. Romanoff probably has a better chance. Whoever wins that primary in Colorado
has a better chance of actually being a senator.
Exactly. And yeah. so, you know, the progressive movement has to start to sort of like be able to make those calculations.
Right.
Like, if we get Romanoff elected, he's going to be senator.
Yeah.
Maybe not Booker, but Booker's more exciting. So how do you, you know, do that? But just talk a little bit about your sense of that whole dynamic.
I think, the sort of triumphalism of Democratic leaders, like that Justice Democrats will, like, we keep beating them over and over again. And of course, that will continue forever. I mean, I don't know why they thought that would continue forever. But now I think what we're seeing some sort of very obvious things happening, I think, which you're talking about, which is like coordination and candidate selection are very difficult. Those are like the two hardest things to do. Democrats, I mean, and we use these terms, I think, loosely, but people mostly know what we're talking about when you say establishment Democrats. Their argument for themselves is that that's the thing that they're good at. And I think their track record on that is abysmal. And, you know, that's sort of, I think that's actually one of the main intra-party debates that doesn't get aired in those terms often enough, is that the argument for the DCCC types and the DSCC types is that we've been doing this a long time. We know how to identify the candidates. We know which races to focus on. And then, you know, their actual track record of getting people elected is okay. And then their track record once in office is not that impressive. And I think the Booker race was incredibly interesting to me, because I do think that's one where he came very close, and he might have done it if it weren't for the early voting. And that was just an example of, like, people were got exposed to this other alternative option, because the way that the DSCC does it when they swoop in and anoint a candidate is like, they don't want you to consider another option. That's unrealistic. But people were told, oh, you know what? You actually have a choice. And, you know, they seized it. And so I think that's sort of the thing that will be crucial going forward, is like figuring out when and where to coordinate and figuring out when to actually like get involved in these races.
Do you, from the perspective of progressives, because like I can understand that Chuck Schumer, I mean, look, I think you and I think are in some agreement here. We think Chuck Schumer is dim in some respects.
Yeah.
And I, you know, my sense is he went in there and it was just about money.
Yeah.
Essentially, he thought that Amy McGrath, a female vet, you know, could get money. And there, I can't tell, and maybe these aren't mutually exclusive, I can't tell if they just don't understand what's happening in terms of what's going on in the country. Like, the idea that Amy McGrath can beat Mitch McConnell is, well, you know, I hope she does.
Right.
But it's very hard to imagine that she can. Like,
yeah.
The idea that, like this sounds hackneyed, but she's just going up there and being like a, I don't know, she's saying that she's going to get along with Trump more than Mitch McConnell. Like, where is the, like, nobody believes that.
Right.
Like, it's not like she's QAnon. Which, if she was, maybe then she could
maybe
beat
she would
McConnell.
Have actually, yeah.
But I don't know that, you know, Democrats should be promoting a QAnon person.
Right.
But there's just no path for her.
Right.
And to the extent that there is, it would be short-lived. But I don't know if Chuck Schumer doesn't know that, or if Chuck Schumer is also thinking like, okay, she's got a 10% chance of winning. And if she does win, she's not going to be a problem for me.
Right.
Like, you know, like, I wonder how much of it is Chuck Schumer going like, the last thing I want is someone to the left of me representing Kentucky.
Right.
Because honestly, because
that's, like, that's going to force him to take all these positions he doesn't really want to take.
How does Chuck Schumer justify any of his positions?
Yeah.
If the senator from Kentucky is to the left of him.
Right. And, you know, we, as we know, he defines himself internally as representing the exact median of the Democratic Senate caucus. Like, whether or not he actually does, that is his self-conception. He represents the median. And if that is what you think of as your job, yeah, you're gonna not want that median to get pulled too far to the left. Especially
right.
if you have his political instincts.
And if you're trying to sell that, and you know that, like, look, my donors need a certain amount of this and of that, and if I'm telling everybody I'm the median,
mm-hmm.
it helps me to fulfill those donor requests if the, you know, at least half the caucus is to the right of me.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Hickenlooper is all about.
I also think it is just a factor of these people's political experience encompassing so many, 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 many years, is that they have, like, for them, these sorts of business-friendly moderate Democrats in Republican-leaning states are, like, not a distant memory.
Right.
Like, in the last 2 decades, we have watched that type become nearly extinct. And I think that they just haven't, to them, it's like, they haven't figured out another model. They just haven't figured out another model. So they're still just chasing after that. And where that gets a little sillier is a place like Colorado, where it's just sort of, they're just an unwillingness to acknowledge where that state has become, what that state has become.
Right.
But yeah. I mean.
And I wonder if it's an unwillingness to recognize that, or just
just trying to keep things.
Trying to hang on to it, because that's the way they're situated. And it's just a matter of getting them out of office. I mean, you know, Wyden and Schumer introduced today, or yesterday, some automatic stabilizers, which remember, Nancy Pelosi refused to do because it would have made the numbers.
Yeah.
It would have been 4 trillion instead of 3 trillion.
Yep.
Like, I'm sorry. I mean, I get it. 4 trillion is 25% more than 3 trillion, but I mean, can anybody conceive of these numbers anyways?
No,
like, it's
exactly.
Not, yeah. Like, from a political standpoint, and I think we also know from an economic standpoint. I mean, it's just, and so, like, we have a couple of these races extant, right? We have Jessica Rain running against Chris Coons in Maryland. I hope that she can win there. Is it Maryland or Delaware? I always get those two confused. We also have Ed Markey facing a challenge from Kennedy in Massachusetts. There's also a big race, I think, in Western Massachusetts where Morse is taking on his name escapes me. Healy with a who is it, Brandon?
Alex Morris, Holyoke mayor, I think.
Yeah, Morris is the Holyoke mayor, but he's taking Richie Neal. That's a very important race too. So if you're in Massachusetts, but these are, you know, a ways off. I mean, it's encouraging. I just sort of feel like, and then the other dynamic is that you have this movement on the streets that is taking on a life of its own, that is becoming sort of like a parallel force. It feels like,
yeah,
that, you know, I imagine on some level is tied into, what's going on with this epidemic.
Yeah.
A friend of mine speculated in California, actually in LA, that the mayor opened up restaurants, as a way of taking some of the energy out of the protests.
Yeah. Getting people off the streets. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think
I heard from someone in LA that it happened basically with no notice, you know, like here in New York, we've been talking about opening restaurants for weeks and when that'll happen. And out there it was just like, oh, all right, a few hours from now. But yeah, exactly. I can definitely see that.
Exactly. And so there's this sort of massive force that's brewing out there, this energy. And then simultaneously we're dealing with like this complete and utter, I think, like, this, we are living through a historic era, obviously, just by nature of a pandemic. But like the way that this country has exposed what's been exposed about this country,
yeah,
is so vivid, it seems to me.
Yeah,
that yeah. I don't know if people my sense is that people don't fully appreciate how fucked up this is going to look to people 50 years from now.
No, absolutely not. I don't know. And I mean, it's sort of hard to, and you know, we are in a lot of ways a really solipsistic country. So it's, you can't even really get it across to a lot of people that like we are doing the worst at this right now out of every country, more or less. We are doing the worst at this for a myriad of reasons at almost every level. And I do think like, it's going to be, yeah, if anything, it's still underappreciated that like this will be looked at as just an inexplicable catastrophe.
and you know,
maybe an overdetermined catastrophe, honestly. Not inexplicable, overdetermined. There's so many causes and we can already identify so many of them.
Yes, it's almost like to identify causes is almost like, I think it is so massive that it's almost irrelevant.
Yeah.
Like, I think you hit so many different causes at one point that the idea is just like, you know, like there was, let me put it this way. For a long time, we would talk about, you know, what are foreign countries going to say about this country after dealing with Donald Trump? Like, yeah. you know, there's a sense in some quarters, like, oh, once we get rid of Donald Trump, we'll repair our relationships with other countries.
Yeah.
And I'm just talking now just like in the foreign policy realm. And my perspective has always been like, well, you can't do that because other countries don't just look at Donald. It would be irrational for them to look at Donald Trump as some type of, divergence from the mean.
Right.
Right. Because what Donald Trump does is he exposes that like, this is a very unstable country. At best, we can go from Obama to Trump. And that means that there's no reason why we couldn't go from Biden to, you know,
to
Tom Cotton or frankly, you know, QAnon. And I think it like the foreign countries had to look at this country as a whole and say, this is an unstable country. There is, as a country, never mind Donald Trump, as a country, there's a problem there. But when you look around at this shit with the masks,
yeah, Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah. Honestly, like, how insane is this? How insane is it? Let's put up this Herman Cain thing. It was just like the story of Herman Cain is so insane. The guy is out there, and you know, on his radio show, I mean, he's like doing the whole, like, you know, I don't know if he ever said soy boy or whatnot, but the you know, like, here he is, you know, at Tulsa, they're, you know, owning the libs by not wearing masks. There he is. Here's a few of the fantastic black voices for Trump at tonight's rally, having a fantastic time. Herman Cain, no masks. Everybody's really excited. He's 74.
I was looking up his age. Yeah, he's 74. Jeez.
74, and he is receiving treatment in an Atlanta area hospital right now for COVID. As of Thursday, he's resting comfortably, did not require a respirator. He's awake and alert. So, you know, maybe he is one of the lucky 74-year-olds. I think like 3 out of 4 of them are lucky.
Yeah.
But chances are he's going to live with the implications of this after. I mean, I'm, you know, I hear stories. A 17-year-old, a friend of mine, his buddy, his 17-year-old brother just died.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
COVID. And, but the insanity continues. I mean, you had Abbott 2 weeks ago had not just said no masks. He said, if you are a municipality and you deem it necessary to require masks, you will not get federal funding.
Right. It comes. Yeah. In. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, of course, he has to reverse himself because and that means every day of the past 3 weeks, because we look at the infections that happened Thursday, 25,000 between 3 states.
Yeah.
Every day for the past 3 weeks, that has been growing.
Mm-hmm.
More people getting infected. We're going to see it for the following 3 weeks. And then it will slow down a little bit because of the mask requirement.
Yes. And I don't know if you've checked recently. I just looked on CityMD's website yesterday. Test results are coming in after like 5 to 7 days for people now, which is way, way up from when it was at the peak in New York. And if you're waiting 7 days for the results, like, first of all, are you going to be quarantining that whole time? Like, that's a long time to not know. And that's, and, you know, that's happening because of just how out of control it's gotten in the rest of the country.
Yes, the testing capacity that we have to turn around results in labs has been chewed up.
Yeah.
And so now you're getting the test 7 days later, and the number of people who are willing to quarantine for 7 days after
without knowing that they're sick, yeah,
right, is, you know, is obviously not as high as we need it to be.
Yeah. I mean, the Abbott thing is, for assuming I'm writing, I just looked this up, and his approval is at like 60%. That was as of June 20th. So not, it wasn't as bad as it is now, but it was pretty bad by June 20th. That's 60%, and with like a third of Texas Democrats approving. I'm like, I mean, I don't know. It just seems like there's, on the one hand, a sort of like general rejection of everyone, that I'm like, Americans are just rejecting everything. And on the other hand, it just seems impossible to like get them to consistently hold political leaders accountable for things that are happening on their watch.
And it's also like, I mean, just this idea of like, you're in denial about, the idea that this, that they are, what they've done with this mask, it's not repairable.
No,
like it's not, it's going to take like horrible tragedy to repair the damage that this administration and that, broadly speaking, Republicans have done in terms of like people's understanding of what, you know, why you wear a mask and, right, and what, you know, what we could have achieved as a society if we had all wore masks. I mean, there was a major screw up by the WHO and the CDC.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah, definitely.
But definitely, there's a difference between you don't need masks and like, even after they say, okay, you do need masks. No, you don't need masks. Masks are for wimps.
Yeah. That's the part of that is the most sort of, it feels American crazy making part of it is, you know, there was, I think I read an opinion piece or at least a headline that was like, you know, how can we help, you know, masks aren't seen as masculine. How can we help change
that? I saw that Washington Post thing.
Yeah, and but it
Are
was like,
fucking kidding me?
Yeah, but it's like that. Like when? Since when? Like, I mean, why? How was that decided? Is that just? I mean, that seems like a decision or observation that you couldn't have said as of 2 months ago.
No,
you
know,
it was like
way.
Just invented from whole cloth in the last few months.
And if anything. Masks were completely associated with masculinity.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Jesse J. Like, think of all the big icons in this country.
I mean, when everyone started wearing masks here in New York, I was just seeing people like walk around in black bandanas wrapped around their faces. And I was like, oh, everyone looks cool now. Like,
I mean, honestly, like, look throughout our society. Who is that masked man? They would say about the Lone Ranger, one of the famous icons for decades in this country. Batman.
Yeah.
You know, all Spider-Man, like all the superheroes,
yeah,
all of the, you know, outlaws, Jesse yeah. James, they all put masks on. Like what? Like in what world?
There are other countries that have insane right wing and crazy illiberal right wing governments. Like, I don't think there's a weird, like, psychosexual thing happening with masks in the UK. Like, they're led by an incompetent buffoon, but I don't, you know, like, it really is just something we just did, I don't know, that the right did to us, but that, like, we just sort of did to ourselves. It's crazy.
I guess the other thing we should maybe touch on too is what's going on with the Biden Trump campaign.
Yeah. the what?
the race, I should say. I don't know. It's so it's such a bizarre way to hold a. I mean, in some ways, it's sort of nice where the campaign isn't on the front page every day.
Yeah.
Right?
No,
like,
seriously.
I mean, in an alternate reality. We are, you know, Donald Trump is going around the country doing all of these campaign rallies, right? Where he is calling Joe Biden Sleepy Joe, I guess presumably saying like he's cognitively declined.
Yeah.
How come he can't do more than one campaign stop every 2 weeks is what he's saying.
He's challenging him to draw a clock. And
exactly. Yeah. Donald Trump, I read a report today saying that they may cancel his convention rally because they're concerned by then nobody's going to show up. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know if anybody's going to show up for their in-person convention as it is.
Right.
If I was the Democrats right now, all I would be doing about is like talking about like, we'll see what happens at the in-person convention that they're going to have. Like, yeah. I would make every American aware that they're that planning they're an in-person convention.
A large in-person convention.
And if I was a Democratic operative, I would also say, like, the idea that they're holding a 32,000-person in-person convention is absolutely obscene. And just wait for everybody to correct me on what the numbers are. You know, set up the expectations. Like, they're expecting 50,000 people to come to Jackson,
to Jacksonville,
Florida.
Now.
That's absurd.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just wait until there's going to be 1,500 people there at that convention, I think.
Right.
And it's going to be like a large, like a small Amway meeting is basically what it's going to look like.
Yes.
Who do you think Joe Biden's going to pick for a
AP? I don't like making predictions, but I have thought for basically the exact same reasons since March. I've just thought it's probably going to be Harris. And I think that the justifications for that choice have changed over the past few months, but I think I have thought the reasons for it have been pretty much the same, which is just that basically he's comfortable with her and he likes her and she won't scare anyone off.
I think I was with you up until a week ago.
Yeah.
But the announcement this week that they have a list of black women for the Supreme Court.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That might mean that. That
makes me believe that maybe it's Tammy Baldwin or Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, that could be. That could be. I hadn't made the connection that you may be right.
And I get the sense that there's just a lot of activity on the Warren side. Like, she came out with that bill to extend to bump
there's some new polling
Voters who already like Biden want Harris as VP. Voters on the fence want Warren, and it's not even close. I mean,
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm sure this is like this. My argument has been because I think all the data, the polling, the data suggests that Warren would be the smart pick. But I've just sort of convinced myself that if it's driven by what Biden, who he's just comfortable with, then that's why I felt like it was her advantage. But we'll see.
I also, and I don't know where I heard this rumor that Obama's people actually want Warren, which is a little bit surprising.
Yeah, based that is surprising.
What we have, you know, heard about her in the White House, but they may also, you know, for vice president, maybe, I don't know. The idea is that,
maybe they just want her out of the Senate.
Well, I mean, that is something to consider because you do have a Republican governor there. And at least for some period of time, he's going to appoint a replacement. I imagine they have an election. I'm trying to remember how it went with Kennedy.
And who knows what, because like these Northeast Democrat states are so bizarre, but they have a Democratic supermajority in the legislature. Like they could change the succession law tomorrow. And it's sort of odd that they haven't acted on that, but
what do you think? I agree with you. Like with Harris, I feel like Donald Trump would have nothing to say about Harris. I mean, I think maybe you'd start to see like, you know, some Facebook ads talking about her being a prosecutor, et cetera, et cetera. But I feel like that's not, I don't know that that's going to have.
I feel like they have, like they're still kind of trying that stuff out. Like I definitely saw like a clip from a Trump ad that was Joe Biden talking about the crime bill, but I can't imagine that stuff is like, they're actually putting real money or effort behind that. That's just trolling the libs.
And Elizabeth Warren, I can already imagine Donald Trump saying like, you know, Sleepy Joe, it's basically you're electing Pocahontas.
Right.
Because Sleepy Joe is probably not even going to show up at the White House.
And it's going to be too sleepy.
Pocahontas.
He's
going to
sleep in. Won't be. Yeah.
I think that the resonance of that in the wake of what's happening on the streets is also. I think that would actually maybe hurt Donald Trump. I mean, we're at the point like where, the football team from Washington, D.C. is maybe at the precipice of finally changing its name.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I guess we'll find out in just a matter of weeks.
Yeah. I mean, he did. I don't know. I think he said he was maybe backtracking on the August 1 deadline. But I mean, you can't really push it much later than that.
Right. He'll do it before the convention, which I think is slated for mid-August, right?
Yeah, it's mid-August. Yeah, so we'll know soon.
All right, so lastly, let's just talk about the brewing economic crisis. I mean, obviously we're in one now, but I still feel like there's sort of this state of shock, right? Where like, you know, unemployment insurance, there's been extra unemployment insurance that's out there. There's some hiring back of folks, but I feel like the wave is sort of still cresting off the coast, as it were.
Yeah.
And it has yet to hit the shore. What's your sense of this? I mean, do you get the sense that people like I've been reading a lot about the commercial commercial real estate market. But particularly the commercially backed mortgages and the CMBSs, and they are securities. They are there is some major, major problems there.
Right.
Like they don't even have, like, I think like the Fed could step up and say, we're going to backstop these, and they still wouldn't be able to deal with it because they just don't have the infrastructure to deal with it, what I understand.
Yeah.
And then you've got unemployment running out shortly.
Right.
You've got evictions.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the
moratoriums are about to end.
Yep. Yep.
Things are about to get really, really ugly, I think, in terms of the economic hardship that people are going to feel.
And a lot of this stuff, eviction moratoriums and unemployment, was designed to be in place while people waited for the virus to go away and the virus didn't go away because we didn't do any of the stuff you were supposed to do to make it go away. So I don't know. It does, like, I've been thinking, I've only seen a little bit about the commercial real estate market, which seems terrifying, but I've been waiting for the sort of eviction apocalypse, because I do think that it's going to be really bad. And you know, that's with the unemployment, like, again, all these things were supposed to be temporary, but so that we have a lot of, I think we can't even really know what the job numbers are, in the sense that there are a lot of people who were furloughed or at least let go with the understanding they'd be brought back later, so just put on unemployment for a while. But I think that there's still uncertainty about whether those jobs will exist, like, and whether people will get to go back to them anytime soon. So I don't know. It seems really hard to, like, measure the state of things, because right now we're in, everything is, like, completely in flux and unknowable and, like, almost unmeasurable.
Do you, give me your sense. I mean, have you seen any reporting on this eviction thing? Like, I mean, like in my mind, and I'm not, I know that I don't think like a landlord in this way, but my mind, I'm thinking, like, who do I think I'm going to get to move in if I kick this person out?
Yeah. I mean, I've only seen anecdotal reporting, like, mainly on from people on Twitter in other cities. I haven't seen much, like, actual reporting on this, but you know, I know, again, anecdotally here in New York, I know people who negotiated with their landlord, got their rent cut a little bit. People, you know, agreed to give people a break. But I don't know. I do feel like it's, like, it's just going to be, you know, there are so many more people are renting now than before the last financial crisis, that I do think, like, I think one thing politicians don't actually understand is that America became much more of a country of renters, like, following 2008, 2009. And, I just don't feel like a lot was done to help them. So we'll see, but it could be a very wide reaching crisis, like, that starts happening soon.
All right. So give me a sense, day before vacation for me anyways. what do you think the rest of the summer? Top line the rest of the summer.
It's, you know, it's so weird being in New York right now. It's been weird all spring, summer, because you feel completely disconnected from the rest of the country. You know, we're here, it's like, we got things under control. Like, you know, we got to delay restaurants a little bit longer, but people are going to the beach, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of sort of bad economic things that won't get dealt with, and we'll get austerity budgets and stuff, and that's going to happen everywhere. But it's hard here to be like, well, here's what's going to happen in the whole rest of the country, because, like, Florida, like, who knows? I don't know what Florida and Texas are going to look like if they have curves that end up looking as awful as the one here did, or if, like, they're going to be able to do some, like, masking and distancing to get some measure of control. So I don't know.
My fear about the Northeast, broadly speaking, is, and I think, obviously, there's, I think, a problem, you know, across the North to some extent, but the Northeast is probably the densest area in the, you know,
yeah,
the country, and also is subject to colder temperatures.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are we going to do in October?
Yeah.
And in November?
Yeah. I don't know. I would like to imagine that, you know, so I was just reading about Massachusetts's contact tracing. I think maybe it was Ben Wallace Wells in the New Yorker. And it's like, it seemed like Massachusetts might have the best contact tracing program in the country right now. And it seems like, you know, we have the lessons of the countries that tackled this successfully so far. We have the lessons of, like, a country like Vietnam, where they were incredibly aggressive about not only putting people in quarantine, but providing space for people to quarantine while they were isolating. And it seems like we know what works. And if I had any faith in our political leadership, I would say, well, come October, if cases have been low for a long time and there's a small breakout again, we will know best practices for containing it. I don't know. That comes down to how competently I think a government will act and how much they will be able to, you know, create in terms of public health infrastructure. over you know, starting now through the fall.
So in other words, we're screwed.
Yeah, we're screwed. Yeah, we're absolutely screwed.
Good. I mean, I feel like we could have just started the interview that way and sort of wrapped it up. But a good way to bookend that talk. Alex Breen, we're screwed. When are your big pieces coming out? Do we know?
Probably look for something medium sized next week, and then maybe the week after that.
Have you been leaning on our catchphrase?
I'm losing it, bro.
Yes, that one gets a lot of play here at home. Yeah,
yeah, that's the John Benjamin catchphrase. We've now merch that says "I'm losing it, bro," with a Majority Report logo. Folks can get that at the Majority Report Radio shop.majorityreportradio.com. Shop. All the proceeds go to the Skid Row Trust in L.A. that deals with unhoused folks. So I'm obligated to play it to everybody we have on the program. Alex Breen, staff writer at The New Republic, host of The Politics of Everything. Thanks so much for joining us. Talk to you soon.
Of course. Of course. Always a pleasure.
All right, folks. Do we even need to take a break, or are we going to just usher in? Is Jack here with
us?
No,
I'll bring him on now.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, the one of the writers of AM Quickie, which Jack, as you know, will be available all next week when we're on vacation. So if folks need their fix of the daily news headlines, they can get it through the AM Quickie. And what is your title at the Discourse blog?
I think what we're going with is we are all co-owners. We're kind of referring to ourselves as a collective, I guess, for whatever that entails. I'm a writer. We've sort of generally fallen into our old roles as it was at Splinter. So I'm a writer. A couple of people are editors. Alex Chan handles sort of like the business and management side of things, and like the partnership with Substack and stuff like that. But in terms of a hierarchy, we're all pretty much just level.
Sweet. So the Discourse is a co-op, and what kind of stuff? I mean, I have a couple of pieces from
pulled,
and anything that basically anything titled "Chuck Schumer is a Clown" is a must read, as far as I'm concerned. And I agreed with the sentiments totally.
Yeah. So we're trying to do basically the same stuff, and carrying on the same voice that we had at Splinter. And that's obviously going to be really critical of the Democratic establishment. Just frankly, because they've been bad for a very long time. And you know, as well as, of course, realizing that the greater enemy in the country is the GOP. But Paul Blessed has done really good reporting consistently. He knows like statewide politics better than anyone else that we have writing for us right now, I think, and is like really following some of these races in close detail. And so he did a really good piece for us this past week about just how massive of a goof it was for the Democrats to pour everything into the Amy McGrath campaign. And she like just narrowly beat a leftist challenger who spent a fraction of what she spent on this. And it's kind of, and she doesn't really have any better chance of beating McConnell than she did before this, you know? So they've just sunk millions and millions of dollars into this race on a candidate whose platform is basically like, I'm going to be a better Republican than McConnell is. So
couldn't agree more with that. Also, I also have to say the piece that Jack Merkinson wrote about the Lincoln Project, basically the Never Trumpers, the Republicans for Biden. It is the most enraging thing in the world that Rick Wilson and Steve Schmidt and I guess Jennifer Rubin and Bill Kristol, that these people, look, I don't mind them making ads. If they want to make ads, make ads, play them on Fox. That's great. But they should get not an iota of credit, credence, respect, they built this. And they're just like coming around saying Democrats. It's basically like going to the, you know, Frankenstein's loose in the village and going to the the townspeople and saying, hey, let me tell you how you should act around Frankenstein. Like, I'm sorry, you invented this. Go kill him and then exile yourself probably for 30 years is what my prescription would be.
It feels like the end point of this like trend that we've seen ever since Trump was elected, basically, of like, and Republicans were doing this in the op-ed pages of, you had like, I'm going to throw out Ross Douthat, but I don't know if it was him specifically, but you had Republicans in the New York Times op-ed pages like saying literally like to win, the Democrats need to go further right or something like that. And like the absolute lunacy of like letting the opposition party say like, actually Democrats, if you want to win, what you need to do is exactly like is what we want you to do. Like if you had just been better Republicans and not Democrats, you would have beat Trump. And it's like, that didn't, Trump wiped the floor with all of the regular Republicans, like, and it does. Yeah. And the Lincoln Project, yeah, feels like the end of that. And except that now with their sort of like hitching their wagon to this like resistance brand and stuff like that, they're getting like screenshots of those tweets that they were sending around about, I think it was probably about the, you know, the Russian bounty thing or something like that. I saw friends of mine who are, you know, not as sickly political as you or I maybe am, you know, just like reposting those things and saying like, yes, this is great. And I have to like not engage because I'd spend all day like screaming on Facebook at like my friends and family back home that like the Lincoln Project are like soulless ghouls. But I don't understand why we keep falling for this.
It's also stunning that what they can get away with saying versus had Democrats produced the same ad, it would be a 3-week controversy right. Of like, how could they possibly say X, Y, or Z about Donald Trump? There is, to me, it is the failure of the Democratic body politic in disassociating Trump from the Republican Party. They did this in the 2016 election. There was never a time you'd hear any type of like surrogate for Clinton, any type of surrogate for the Democrats, any type of spokesperson for the Democrats blame Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell for Donald Trump. They would never, ever, ever do it. And they did so not only to the detriment of people who are running, to Democrats who are running against Republican congressmen or you know, I literally congressmen, I can't imagine, there's just the sheer numbers, or senators, they could have tied Trump to the rest of the Republican Party. They refused to do it. And to a large extent throughout the past 3 years, they've refused to do it. And this is what you get on some level. You still like, there's no way the Republican brand should be able to do anything for decades. And to the extent that that will be the case, which I'm not convinced it will, but to the extent that it is, it has nothing to do with what the Democrats have done. It's just, everybody is just disgusted by the Republicans.
Yeah. And I wrote a piece for Rolling Stone a while ago about sort of like the rehabilitation of Mitt Romney, because I think he's a perfect example of this. And I think it's because if the Democrats actually start treating Trump for what he is, which is like a natural endpoint of the GOP, like a continuation of everything the GOP has been trying to do for years and years and years, then that basically calls into question like all of the norms that they also built their power on. You can't any longer like have, I think it was, you know, Chris Murphy from Connecticut praising Romney for his like courageous vote to convict Trump or something like that. If you don't have a system where you're able to just ignore the fact that like legislatively speaking, Romney's record would, if he were in Trump's position, would look almost identical, except maybe he'd be less like legally sloppy on the immigration bans and things like that and get him held up in the court.
Exactly.
Like, these are the same people. And I think that's the perspective we're coming from at Discourse, and the things that we sort of want to keep hammering on, is that there are a lot of people from that benefit from having like these perspectives and this just keep being pushed, that like we can go back to the old era of respectability politics and of working with the other side, and that fundamentally like both Republicans and Democrats want to make the country a better place. They just differ on like how to do so, right? That's like the whole line that our politics were built on. And, you know, anyone looking at it now can tell that like that's just not true.
I know you've been doing a lot of coverage of the protests. Are you going to still do that? Are you doing that for the discourse? Give me your sense of where you think they're going.
Yeah. So, I haven't been doing too much protest writing, for discourse, because I was doing, freelance work for other publications for that. I got a couple of stories in the mix at a few places. I did a few nights of, like direct coverage in the early days of the protests when things were really chaotic for, Business Insider and Insider. I've been out, the past week or so. I've been out a couple of times to the Occupy City Hall encampment in New York. And it seems like that sort of feels like the way that these protests are going. I've been thinking a lot about how this movement kind of settles into consistent direct action for the entirety of the summer. I think it can. What you and Perrine were talking about earlier, I think is really interesting, of LA, like, opening up bars and restaurants and things like that as a way to diminish the protests. I think they did get so big so fast because for a huge amount of people, there was literally just nothing else to do. And this felt like, it felt like for protesters and for just the everyday people that were joining into them as a way of like doing something, affecting some control over our circumstances that all of us have lacked. Like I've been sitting inside my apartment. That was, I'm not going to lie, a huge motivator for me to like go out and report on these things, because it was just like, this is something that's happening. This is something that I can do and see. So I think what we're going to see over the rest of the summer is more sort of sustained, maybe not necessarily the numbers that we saw in the early days. I think there will maybe once a month or so, there might be a protest that gets really big. That's sort of agreed upon by the various groups that are organizing these things is like, this is the big one. We really want to show up in numbers, but I think we might see, smaller sort of like permanent, either occupations, if you want to call them, either outside City Hall or other places in the city where people just try to put a consistent, steady basis of like keeping that message active and in the streets. Yeah.
So, all right, let me ask you this then. Are you aware of Joe Paglioni? I think it's Paglioni. He's a right wing talker. I've listened to him for years, mostly a weekend show. I think I've seen, but he probably does a weekly show. But I think the one I heard was a weekend show. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious. You've been covering these protests. He has trained his sights on the CHOP. This is the occupation in Seattle. And I wonder if the protesters in New York or anywhere else through your are a little bit concerned about his initiative to take on the protesters. Let's play this clip. It's he's bringing out the big guns here. Going after, here he is, Joey Pags. Joe Pags is the way that he does his radio stuff. And here he is. He dropped this thing to just rip apart what's going on in Seattle.
That historic hit at the Hop. Pags parody, we're going to call At the Chop.
Let's go.
You may hear some extra bass lines in there from yours truly. Make sure you understand it's the Chop, not the Hop. You can grab it and control it. You can simply start to hold it at the chop.
Chop, chop, chop.
When the mayor gives approval and doesn't threat removal at the chop.
Chop, chop, chop.
It's the left sensation sweeping the nation at the chop.
Chop, chop.
Take it again. Let's go to the chop. Let's go to the chop.
Oh, baby.
Let's go to the chop.
Oh, baby.
Let's go to the chop. Come on. Let's go to the chop. of the chop. Mo, well, you can steal it and conceal it. So violent you can feel it at the chop. Where there's murder and mayhem, a woke crowd and playpen at the chop. They attack and kill a real wake-up pill at the chop. Let's go! Let's go to the chop. Let's go to the chop, oh baby. Let's go to the chop, oh baby. Let's go to the chop. Come on, let's go to the chop. Let's go! A little sum-sum here, a little piano solo for you. Okay. We can't see your reaction live. That bothers me.
You can tell that he just, like, throughout that whole thing, he's like, I'm doing it. I'm sticking it to him. Like, the libs will never recover from this. There's no coming back.
Honestly, he's right.
I really do think, like, this could end politics as we know it. Just playing that, I feel like everybody would just sort of say, well, I'm shake my head and walk away. I mean,
it's catchy. Yeah.
Super catchy. But those lines about, like, you go up there and there's going to be violence and mayhem and a woke playpen. I mean, how do people recover from something like that?
It's a devastating blow to the left in general, I think. And after seeing that, I can probably say confidently that I don't think this protest movement has a future.
I feel like I could do an entire show just playing that over and over again and reacting to different parts of it. I mean, just everything from, like, I wasn't even aware that they made those polo shirts anymore. Just starting with that and the idea that this guy is pulling out, it is so perfect that he is pulling out a song that is literally 75 years old. To do this song parody of this movement that's going on there, because this is also like it comes from an era where there was acute discrimination in this country. I think it was probably written at a time where you still had literal redlining by the government, where they would not back mortgages for black people, but would for white people. And I thought that was very astute of him to bring up. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on there, but I also speculate that there's some type of royalty play if he writes and sings music. I'm not sure what it is. I know that's in the case in TV. You watch these cartoons, and the reason why there's always songs there is because you actually get more fees for it as a writer. That's a little tip for you. Yes. If you're ever going to write on a comedy show, try and write a song.
We'll look into that for a discourse blog. I think that could be a promising revenue stream for us if we branched out into parody songs.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I'm going to look for the reporting on how people are reacting to that, seeing if that creates a dent in the support for the protests that are going on, and I'd be curious. I'd watch a half hour video of protesters just responding to watching that.
There's a big market for, you know, that those kind of YouTube videos of, like, people react. I think at the Occupy City Hall movement, they had a big projector and a screen that they were screening the city budget meeting on. I think that was Tuesday night. And I think you could just go down there, plug it in, and, like, play that for them entirely. And it would probably, you know, I think it would probably disperse the entire movement right there. Yeah.
There you go. Well, Jack, folks can go. Now, I know you guys at the Discourse blog, how long you guys been doing it for? For some time, right?
Yeah. So we started as a WordPress. This whole thing kind of came out of, you know, for people who aren't familiar, Splinter was the politics website in the sort of Gizmodo Media Group / Geo Media umbrella that got cut from the roster in budget cuts by the new private equity owners of that media conglomerate. There are about 8 to 10 of us working consistently on Splinter at the time, all found ourselves out of a job. I and some of the other writers are pretty used to, like, freelancing. I just kind of skipped back into it, but we never really felt like we had a place to pitch a lot of the stories and a lot of the angles and takes and stuff like that, that had a home at Splinter. And all of us kind of, this was right as the primary season was heating up. And so we all just kind of were like, you know, what are we doing? We found ourselves live blogging the debates to each other in our, you know, private group chats and things like that. And so we thought, why don't we just start a blog, start throwing some of these things up online whenever we have time. And we shifted it to Substack about 2 months ago, I think. And so we're going, it's been all free so far, but we're going to a paid subscription model on Monday. There'll still be a lot of free content on the site. We typically try and publish about twice a day. I'm not 100% sure on what the makeup is going to be of like free to paid material in terms of how many times, but you'll still be getting free stuff regularly every week. And then paid subscribers will be getting a lot more sort of like in-depth material and fun stuff on a week by week basis. But yeah, it's gone pretty well so far. We've had
Well, I mean, I love the blog format. I like to see that it's being brought back, and folks should check it out. Support the work you're doing. Super important for independent entities like this. You can head over there. It's discourseblog.substack.com.
Discourse.blog also works. It all redirects to the same thing. Yeah, and you can just
blog. Okay, great.
You can throw your email in there for a free sign up right now, and then the paid subscriptions will get turned on Monday, and so you can upgrade. It's going to be $8 a month for paid subscriptions. And yeah, I think you know, if you're a reader of Splinter, it's been nice, you know, doing the work for the AM Quickie and working with you, Sam, because I think the voice is very much similar, obviously in a different format. You're kind of going to get commentary on politics from a sort of from a personal angle and from a irreverent maybe of a, you know, we understand that all of these things are extremely serious. But we want to be able to discuss them like actual human beings, you know, and not have like everything be something that you would read on Vox or the New York Times or something like that. There's a lot of political commentary out there, but we kind of want to have that relationship with our audience and be personal with it. And it's been going well.
Great. All right, folks, check it out. Jack, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for the work you're doing on the AM Quickie, and people are really enjoying it. And I think we're going to have a lot of people listen to the Quickie next week. We're going to be on vacation. People want to get their headlines. I'd like to say a little bit of irreverence. They can check it out, amquickie.com. Jack, thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks for having me, Sam.
All right, folks, we're going to head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will take your phone calls. I'm going to dial right in right now. What do you think about that? It is the number, of course, is 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. I will also turn on the IM. Is Jamie going to join us too, I think?
Yep.
All right. Just a reminder, check out the AM Quickie this week or this week coming up. You can get it on the app at majorityapp.com. We're even, I think, going to send some notifications on the app that it's up every morning. And that way you can catch up with your headlines. And then we have new content for you, great interviews every day next week. So you will love it. You will love it. Also, just a reminder, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. You can always check our podcast and our YouTube descriptions for links to stuff like Sunset Lake CBD, et cetera, et cetera. And don't forget, we have merch over at the shop.majorityreportradio.com. Pick up this. This is the I'm Losing It Bro motif. Supporting Skid Row Trust in LA. And also don't forget, check out TMBS this week on the Michael Brooks Show. Bill Fletcher Jr. was on. Check that out. They talked about the post office. They talked about a lot of different things. Patreon.com/TheMichaelBrooks Show or TMBS and YouTube.com/TMBS. Also, the Nomiki Show. You can find that on Patreon.com, The Nomiki Show, and also on YouTube.com, The Nomiki Show. Check that out. You will like that. And Jamie, tell us what's happening on the Antifada.
Sure. So this past week on the Antifada, we spoke with Nick Estes, host of the Red Nation podcast, indigenous rights activist, and author of a very good book about Standing Rock. We talked about taking down racist statues, including the final boss, Mount Rushmore, the connections between the indigenous rights movement and the uprising for Black lives, and how to envision decolonization, both within a capitalist and post-capitalist framework. Pretty stoked on that one. Check it out. Also, today at 7 o'clock, my DSA caucus, Emerge, is hosting our first ever public-facing political education event with Marxist historian Mike Davis on the Rebellion for Black Lives, the History of Urban Resistance, and the Future of the U.S. Left. I'm very excited about that. I wrote some of the questions. I'm excited to have him answer them. So that's at 7 o'clock tonight, Eastern. Also, tomorrow, July 4th, America's birthday, I will be appearing on the virtual socialism conference, Socialism 2020. I'm going to be on a panel on socialist organization and the capitalist state. Eric Blanc is on it too. I believe 3:30 p.m. Eastern. They do everything in central time because they're in Chicago, so you got to do a little bit of math. Not really sure what I'm going to say yet. Probably just going to copy everything Mike Davis says tonight, but check it out. I'll put all the links in the blog post.
Okay, and Matt.
Twitch.tv/literary hangover. There's going to be some new streams, and tomorrow for patrons will be the third part of our George Orwell Lion and the Unicorn reading series, and on public feed you'll get the first two parts of that.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. Number 646-257-3920. We'll take some IMs. We will see you there.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance. My first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabs.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. Are you guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
That guy might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird.
No way!
Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands
up. Ooh.
Wow. But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.